Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. Another busy week in South Africa, and one of the things that has happened that's causing a lot of comment and a lot of concern, Juanita, is the presidency releasing this report that he of the commission that he had instigated last year into the State Security Agency. Became sort of a topic of conversation after Jacques Poe published his book, The President's Keepers and Accused. I think the then head of the SSA, Arthur Fraser, of running a parallel spy network and using lots of other people's money. What is this a good? Is this good for Ramaphosa, or is it a bad thing? I mean, does it put him under pressure, or does it relieve pressure on him?
I think it's a good thing because he commissioned the report. Yeah. He instituted this high panel because the presidency's outlook to dealing with the rotten government has been, we cannot go and clean up something we don't know how dirty, how bad it is. Yeah. So they've done this in different institutions. They've done it, on different, parallel committees set up. So this team was sent there to say, look at the entire intelligence landscape, look at the law, look at the structure as it is, and then look at the violations, the illegalities, and so to paint a broad picture. Yeah. Obviously, we were salivating at the findings that the report, that we now know it's fact, that the report, that the State Security Agency was used for ANC factional fights. Yeah. But it's a bigger picture. It really goes deep into this intelligence network that was designed and engineered from 2009 up until Zuma left office to serve his interests. Yeah. And let me give you some shocking things that this report contains. The structure of having a combined state security agency that had an intelligence arm for domestic and for foreign.
Because they used to be separate.
They used to be separate entities. And there's a finding that merging together was actually unconstitutional.
Oh, really?
So the changing of laws, the changing of just the general oath of allegiance, moved from serving the republic to serving the republic and being loyal to the president and the minister. Effectively, you would have to sign an oath of allegiance
to the president
to
and the minister.
No, initially it used to be to the republic, and that was changed to the president and the minister. So
isn't
I mean that
extraordinary?
Yeah. So for me, those are the small things that sort of fell through the cracks, but it really painted this ghastly picture of, on one hand, manipulating an entire system based on no law or any relevant research, and then secondly, engineering the whole structure, bringing in a unit called the Special Operations, effectively deploying an ANC cadre in the form of Thulani Dhlomo, who then served as ambassador to Japan, to head the Special Operations.
And what did it do?
The Special Operations Unit, by their own report. Now, this is not the panel, making their own assessment.
Yeah, yeah.
This Special Operations Unit boasted that in between 2016 and 2017, they did things. Their successes include stopping the distribution of CR-17 regalia in 2016.
CR-17 being the Cyril Ramaphosa campaign
Absolutely.
For ANC leadership. Yeah.
Getting involved in a media campaign. For the ANC around the elections, infiltrating protest groups outside the State of the Nation address in 2016.
Okay.
So basically, this unit was used for the protection of President Jacob Zuma at the time. And then there was the other part of it where it's the financial implications.
Yeah.
Where this panel has found that the State Security Agency became a cash cow for people inside and outside the agency.
Does it confirm Jacques Poe's contention in his book that Arthur Fraser developed this parallel network?
So now there's
does that confirm that?
It does confirm it.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is that the PAN, the principal agent network, that concept that Jacques Poe wrote about, that sort of came to an end in 2009, 2010 or so.
That was quick.
No, because it was for a while. Because remember,
so it wasn't Zuma related.
It was Zuma related.
But it couldn't have been because he only became president in 2009.
But remember, the history is that Arthur Fraser left the agency and then returned in 2016.
Yeah.
So I mean, there is findings of illegality. Mm. There's findings that people need to be charged. Arthur Fraser may be facing a criminal charge himself. Yeah. But for me, what is interesting is this is the suspicion we've been having for a long time was the special operations.
Yeah.
But because this is what we saw in this last, 3 to 4 years,
yeah.
where, it was politicized. Agents were used for ANC factional fights. And we wrote in the Sunday Times that 20 million rand left the agency on the 15th of December 2017 and was done in January. That money was used for NASRAC.
Okay. But here's my question then. Does, we go back, is this good or bad for Cyril Ramaphosa? Because the Sunday Times, I think of last weekend, you were quoting agents who are unidentified saying there'd be a fight back.
Right.
And that they would see Cyril at the NGC next year.
Yeah. So there's two elements to it. This gives Cyril the ammunition to go against these people, to act out against these people. There is possibility of criminal charges. We're likely to see the former Minister of Intelligence charged.
Yeah.
That's the recommendation.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is this fight back. We spoke to the Minister of Intelligence, the incumbent Minister of Intelligence, Dipuo Letsatsi Duba, who said she's aware of a rebellion, that there are senior spooks who are unhappy, that, and they're now claiming that Ramaphosa is agitating them, but she believes that it's sort of a handful of people who benefited and looted through the state of lawlessness that was at the State Security Agency.
Okay. Now, Sikonathi, the person to deal with all of this is not going to be Cyril Ramaphosa, because he can't prosecute people. So what he's trying to do is create institutions that respond correctly to information like this, right? So you've got on your cover the new head of the NPA, Shamila Batohi. I'm not sure that the hat was necessarily fair on the Photoshop, but there's a new corruption buster in town. Were you able to interview her for this cover?
We were not able to interview her. She had just barely put her feet under
but
her
what,
desk.
But what are the conclusions in the piece? What chance has she got of, putting these people behind bars?
So she's got to put them before the magistrate and the judge first.
Yeah, sure.
So it's what she needs to do, what the whole NPA needs to be like. And a big part of that is a resolution to the Nomgcobo Jiba matter and Mukhwebi, who are now before the Mukhoro inquiry.
Yeah.
You get that out of the way and hopefully them out of the way and the president can then appoint people that are fit and proper for office as her deputies and start really getting trained prosecutors and agents and even chartered accountants. You need that kind of skill in there. And she also is going to create that special, the new version of the Scorpions, let's call it.
Well, but this is the interesting thing about the special investigator. That can be created whether or not Jiba or Mkhwebe are found, are disciplined or let go of. I mean, it doesn't. They don't need to wait for that.
Definitely not.
And that person, whoever it is, the special investigating director, has no reporting line whatsoever to the deputies.
Has no reporting line whatsoever to the deputies, and really reports only to the head of the NPA.
Yeah.
So you need to get them out of the way for the broader organization, for the health of the organization. You need to solve the Nomgcobo Jiba Mukhwebe matter.
Sure.
You need that powerful special investigator, and which will create a special directorate for state capture crimes, including what Kanita is talking about now.
Yeah.
So that's just the task at hand, and Cyril has to make the appointment.
Sorry, Kanita, you were saying?
Yeah, no, I was saying that the Nomgcobo Jiba and the Lawrence Mukhwebe matter is one particular matter, but the effects of their tenor or their grasp on the NPA mustn't be underestimated.
Yeah.
We've heard things at the Mukhoro inquiry that they obviously, to have done the things that they have done, they needed to have foot soldiers throughout the NPA. So what we understand is that Shamila Batohi has been shy to talk about what she's been doing now. It's been a month and a half that she's been in office, and obviously the media is putting a lot of pressure on her to come out and report about, you're saying watch the space, watch the space, what are you actually doing?
Yeah.
But what we understand is that she's actually looking at reporting lines and functions of certain people, and to understand, to say, okay, these things went wrong with these state capture cases. What you know, who was actually responsible? Because if you hear, when you hear the, you know, testimony of the Mokgoro inquiry, I've heard it, you know, when there was the actual interviews of the NDPP candidates. It's so unclear as to who's actually taking decisions.
Sure.
Because, you know, you'd had the NDPP saying, you know, I don't take decisions, directors of public prosecutions. So there's been a mess that has been persisting for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so cleaning up the mess would be, A, understanding the problem. And I think that comes back to what the president did at State Security Agency.
Yeah.
But the biggest issue that this director will face is a financing issue. And people are underestimating this, because the justice minister says justice does not have the budget for it.
Yeah.
The finance minister did not allocate money for this particular directorate. So there will have to be a reprioritization in a system where prosecutors
could they raise money from business?
They can't.
No.
I don't think that's possible.
No, as I understand it,
they can second people from business, and that could be done for free.
They can. You can second people from the SAPS,
and from law firms and accounting firms.
Yes.
And so, what
people with those specialist skills, and they would then be under the command of this special investigator.
Yes. But their salaries could still be paid by the ex-employer as a form of helping.
But could you imagine now the optics of that politically? Like the kind of conspiracy theories you would have, white monopoly capital paying like Fibonacci to chase somebody.
No, the
why make me an example?
I think it's a good idea in principle, but I think like, you know, considering the political environment, you know, and you could see how that could be manipulated, how that could be like twisted to the to show like or to put up.
Well, look, I mean, there are four deputy directors. You know, maybe we just can two and save money that way, and you know, for budgeting. For budgeting for the special investigator,
but there's real roles that these special directors play. You know, Silas Ramaite.
Some of them are HR. Excuse me, they don't have to be deputies.
that's true. But also, I mean, it's just an issue of how long things take in government.
Yeah.
A reprioritization of budget is going to take forever.
No.
Then it's identifying the right people. When this unit was announced, we wrote about that there are certain people that were approached to say, come back to the NPA and bring these type of skills, etc.
Yeah.
Because the reality of the situation is that you may get skills from outside, but people in law firms may not be able to know how to win cases in the NPA, number one. And number two is to revive cases who have been deliberately killed or pushed to the back of the room.
Yeah, sure.
And so that is going to be the most important.
But I mean, how hard is it going to be to prosecute the VBS? The work is there. It's in front of you. I mean, it's a new it's a new case. There's been, you know, there's a lot of forensic work that's gone on. There's a lot of paperwork. You've got bank statements. It's all there. I mean, you could, you know, it's surely not that hard. One of the cases, surely, that the NPA, if not the investigating director, will be looking at, or one of the things they'll be looking forward to, is the forthcoming PwC forensic report into Steinhoff. Because surely Marcus Huster, who lives in, I drove past his house the other day in Hermanus. It is almost an exact copy of the Gupta compound. It is just big buildings behind a high wall, you know, unattractive, really gloomy. And apparently that's where he lives. And he sort of is spotted now and again. But surely Marcus Huster must become a target for an NPA doing his job properly.
Yeah, and I think that has been the criticism of the NPA has been, you know, why the selective, you know, or why is it the political criticism was, why are you only going after the Guptas when they were going after the Guptas? But the reality is that
they were pretending to go after the Guptas.
But this is the consequences of breaking down the NPA. We see it, that a clear-cut case of Marcus Huster that you know, shouldn't take a very senior prosecutor to prosecute.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have a specialized commercial crimes court. You have these serious commercial crimes units of the Hawks.
Yeah.
But you know, what I found interesting, you're talking about chartered accountants. Did you know that the Hawks only had two chartered accountants working? Because how are you supposed to do forensic investigations? They've since hired more people.
But people should do their national service. You know, we should introduce a form of national service where if you do accountancy or law, you go and work for the SARS or the police.
That is the case, but it's not that the people are refusing. to do their national duty. Yeah. It's just that the government deliberately for the past 10 years has refused to have people of worthy skill in the government because they can be troublesome. You know, the questions they ask, they can just arrest even the most. In fact, why don't we should be already having Jacob Zuma answering to treason, not only on this newest report of this agency, but also indeed on the Gupta matters, and there's a whole lot more, including just changing the oath.
There's an extremely rude cartoon of Jacob Zuma in this week's edition of the Financial Mail on page 4. And I'm not going to say this is a family show, we shouldn't show it. but Lucanio, just come to a story on your front page today. Group 5, another construction company, files for business rescue. That's becoming like a domino thing now. I mean, so it's Group 5, Basil Reed. Who else has gone sick and
Esso Limited.
What happened to Marion Roberts? Marion Roberts,
the listed ones. Marion Roberts is very much intact on the JSE, and it's got a big project outside the country.
And why is this? It's simply that there's no work?
I mean, it says something really sad about the state of this economy. I mean, I was out of the country for like a long time. When I left these companies, Group 5, Marion Roberts, these were iconic names. I remember like when I was still living in London just before the World Cup. You know, these companies were getting these big contracts. I mean, I think at that time, Group 5 was worth something like 8 billion rands.
But, I mean, it's not as if there's no work to do. Basil Reed, I know this because my dad used to live in Montague, and I went to go and see him just before he died, and Basil Reed had torn up the road right through Montague and was building a huge new road between Montague and a town called Ashton, where Tiger Brands has a big factory. And literally one morning, they packed up all their equipment and left. And the town has now got this sort of scar running through it. Undone, unfinished, and who's going to do it? But surely something had gone wrong with the payment for that project.
I think that's part of it. I mean, we've seen a collapse. I mean, I suppose you take it back a decade of economic underperformance, economic corruption, the collapse in state institutions, collapse in municipalities. You know, that's basic projects that's like you just mentioned there. And obviously, I mean, they've also made their own big mistakes as well.
They've
gone and done, not just necessarily Group 5. I think Wilson Ofcon the other day was talking about how they've underpriced themselves in the contracts in Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, you sort of go to Australia and you think, why is nobody else in Australia taking this contract? Yeah. Like at $10 million or whatever. Because a lot of these guys were so eager.
To externalize their capital.
Maybe they didn't do the proper due diligence.
The biggest problem with our construction companies, the road project we're talking about, for example, and I don't know about that specific one, the government does not pay on time in the event that there is any project going in the first place. And this country, for the past 10 years since the end of the World Cup, we have done absolutely nothing other than the two power stations at Eskom. There's nothing else that's happening. There's no construction projects. Yes, not to absolve the companies. In fact, themselves, they made guilty. They stole from the public back in 2010 and before.
Yeah.
But in this particular instance of Group 5, they went out on a project in Ghana and completely messed up the execution and incurred more than R1 billion of fines. Now they are sitting with stuff that they cannot carry because there's no work coming in, and that's why
because these companies are run, and they're the only South African companies where you don't have a preponderance of accountants running the companies. They're run by engineers and quantity surveyors and people who know the business, and those are real skills that we lose when these, a company like Wilson Bailey Homes, WBHO, it mainly employs engineers. And, you know, if the labor is part-time because it gets employed for a job. But on the staff, you want to hold those engineers, you want to hold those quantity surveyors. And if there's no work, they're going to go elsewhere. I mean, South Africans can build anywhere in the world, and
that's exactly the point we're making in the Financial Mail, that with this construction industry, now with nothing happening in terms of investment on the government side, we lose the critical skills that we need to restart this economy. Mm. The engineers and the accountants leave and go work anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's really the poor guys that get employed for that job, for that project, that are the real tragedy.
And when they go, there's no one to, skill is something you hand over person to person, And that's a terrible.
Impact. If you're talking about the economic revival and the new dawn, how are we going to have a new dawn if we're not building if we're not improving our infrastructure, if we don't have companies that are able to actually deliver that infrastructure?
Clearly, we need a lot of work going on for these big construction companies to function properly.
Yeah, these guys are not the kind of construction company that will go build a school or a clinic. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's too small. Yeah. You need proper bridges like the ones that they need to be building in Pondoland. You need to build hundreds of kilometers of road, open up the Transkei and things like that. Then you'll have a lot going on. Yeah. You need to have targets. We've got something called the National Development Plan that's been gathering dust somewhere. Open up, start implementing, you will start rebuilding the skills. In this company alone, Group 5, we've lost 45 years of good engineering work in one company. That's the history of Group 5.
Yeah. God, that's shocking.
Well, since it was infrastructure, a massive infrastructure spend part of the stimulus package, was it?
No, the stimulus package is not
really... Well, in South Africa, there's no stimulus package. It's what they talk about when they are desperate to avoid a credit downgrade.
Okay.
I was also briefly interested in Tito Mboweni and the PRC. He's right to try and stop it. I mean, it's insane to have a commission of inquiry going on at the same time as you've got legislation on amending the PRC going through the two houses of parliament. Why not wait for the results of the commission of inquiry, surely?
That's exactly how real economies should work. If you're investigating what's wrong with the organization, you can't at the same time be deciding outside of that process how you're going to fix it.
But, the story inside Business Day today is hilarious. Yeah. I mean, this guy is saying, well, the next parliament can deal with the amendments, or to deal with the results of the inquiry. The inquiry is going to finish in it pretty soon, actually. It doesn't have much longer to go. It'll be over before the election. Its recommendations are marked.
Which may be very inconvenient for some people.
Yeah.
They would obviously want to extend this thing beyond the election.
It's been an incredible... It's almost been, as juicy as the Zondo Commission. It's been quite extraordinary.
Peter, again, the one thing, this country is being ruled through commissions. No one is governing anymore. We have... not a single high-profile arrest, yet we've got thieves all over Parliament in the executive and government. In the financial media, that's Shamila Patohi's story. Yeah. We state that only 213 government officials have been convicted in 2018.
Junior level people.
Those are all junior people. Yeah. Of course, it's still double the previous year. Yeah. But you go for the guys who've got no political clout. Yeah. We have Banyile Dlamini sitting in Parliament as a member of Parliament, having been found lying, a criminal offence, lying to a court, lying to Parliament, lying to everybody. Yeah. And guess what? Yeah. She's coming in the next cabinet.
I'm sure she will too, and because
the list. I've been harping on the list process, and it was almost as if the ANC was giving us a bone to chew on. In the run-up to the actual compiling of the list, saying there's going to be this integrity committee, there's the strict vetting. We got the actual vetting forms of what it looks like. You had to declare your interest and how much of what's your expenses, and this whole lifestyle audit thing, only for the list now to be sent to the IEC. There will be a press conference later today, but that basically it only dealt with, small boys from the branches, but your Malusi Gigaba.
That's politics to compromise, surely. I mean, we did we expect anything less? I do expect some arrests before the election. I mean, Shamila Batoyi, this is more pressure for her. Your cover story today, she's got to get going. I mean, this is sort of, this is Elliot Ness and who is the famous American. Mafioso who they got on a tax charge. But before we carry on with that, I don't want to carry on with that. Very briefly, Comair has suspended flights, Lucanio, of its one and only Boeing 737 MAX 8, like the one that crashed in Ethiopia the other day. You've written an editorial in today. What was in Business Day today, were they right to suspend the flight or...
You know, this is a story that is basically like exploded. First is one crash, and then it gets linked to another crash from 6 months before in Indonesia. And then obviously then suddenly like China and Indonesia said we're not going to use it anymore. Europe followed suit yesterday. I mean, initially Comair sort of went the legalistic way of saying, look, we only, well, the plane is safe. It's been decided as so by the U.S. regulators. So we're not going to do anything about it. We're going to monitor the situation. But in a way, it shows you the power of social media. So suddenly everybody starts attacking.
But don't we just wait for the Americans to say stop flying it? I mean, there are a couple of thousand of these flying in the States at the moment.
They are still flying in the States, exactly. So.
Here's a good way of looking at the Boeing 737 MAX 8 meter.
Yeah.
And a blessing. South African Airways is too broke to afford one.
So. Anyway, they tend to buy Airbus because the French, you know, they're a little bit more sort of lively on the negotiating front. Anyway, that's all we've got for you this week. Thank you so much, and we'll see you again next week.